Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Want to let you know as well, just talking to Aaron Ambrose from the Canadian national team. The game against the United States, the two games, Sunday, November 21st, that one in Kingston at 5 o'clock Eastern, Tuesday, November 23rd in Ottawa. That game starts at 7 o'clock Eastern. More information on the Hockey Canada website. Again, welcome to Hour 2. Dion Phaneuf coming up here in about 15 minutes. Calls it a career officially today. Former Calgary Flame, former Maple Leaf, Ottawa Senator, Los Angeles King as well. Played internationally for Canada in a number of different places. We'll talk to him about his career and, as per Ambrose, ask him about blocking shots. Rick Peckham, 2020 Foster Hewitt Award winner. He will be by and he will be calling tonight. Coming out of retirement, folks, to do his buddy Pete Weber a solid. Pete's a play-by-play voice of the Nashville Predators under the weather. Rick is stepping in for Pete. Let's get to our next guest. Wayne Scanlon covers the Ottawa Senators for Sportsnet. And tonight, Wayne, we would have seen the Ottawa Senators face off against the New Jersey Devils, but not so. The next three games have been postponed. And I guess maybe the cynical side of me says, what took you so long? There was a hue and cry for this going back some time now, but why did they finally do it when they did?
Well, hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good, man.
I think a few things. I think the fact that, you know, this called for a road trip across the border. So you have to think about, you know, in terms of spread, safety, all that. Why wasn't it sooner? You know, there's the thought of about L.A. coming in here and Calgary coming in here and that it's more difficult to, you know, reschedule those games. But, you know, a friendly Eastern rival in the Pittsburgh Penguins are in here on Saturday and, you know, could have maybe, you know, put a stop to it then, but also the numbers got up. The numbers got up to 10. Mm-hmm. And whether 10 is the magic number or it's just the fact that day after day they seem to be adding more and without stopping. So I think, you know, that had a lot to do with it as well.
Formanton, Gambrell, Connor Brown, Austin Watson, Josh Brown, Victor Mete, Nick Holden, Nikita Zaitsev, Matt Murray. You know, I know that there's a lot. I wonder about that number 10 as well. I wonder because we saw this not that long ago and the players were just all, you know, taken off the list. We saw this in San Jose about a week and a half, two weeks ago, and nothing was done and they went forward and played all their games as well. I'm with you. I wonder if the magic number here is when it hits 10, then we do shut things down. But I have no idea. What is this? Like when this all started and it became obvious that it was going to, every day was going to be an Agatha Christie novel. And, you know, the lights flicker and the train on the train car and, you know, two people disappear. What happened to the sort of the mood around the team, the mood in the team? Was there a nervousness every day at the rink as everyone waited for results to come back?
Oh, my God, I think so. You know, and we only get kind of glimpses of it. We're kept at bay, of course. So yeah. We're back to, you know, last year's standards where everything's on Zoom. There's no live interaction with players. We're allowed to go to games, but there's no practices. They haven't been training at all. And I think it's been building, Jeff. I think day after day there's more and more worry. These guys are getting tested multiple times. Some of the tests are coming back positive, and then the next one's negative. So
yeah.
We had a case where, Drake Batherson and Nikita Zaitsev both went on and off the list, you know, and then back on it again. So, you know, I just think of what it's doing to families. Nick Holden's got four kids at home. You know, he got put on the list about a week ago. And, you know, I can just, you know, to be a fly on the wall in that house where, you know, there's four kids, there's kids that are supposed to be going to daycare, going to school. Some players are staying at hotels, and Nick may well be one of them. And coaches are bunking in with other coaches to protect their families. So I think there's just it's just been really chaotic and stressful behind the scenes.
Yeah, it does sound like it. And, you know, that's the one thing that I was wondering about. How much of the Ottawa Senators now are just treating this all like one big road trip and everyone's saying, you know what, it's not safe to be around the family and around this hockey team. I'm just going to bunker down at a hotel. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a sizable number of Ottawa Senators who are doing that. To the team itself right now, after 15 games, we all followed the Tkachuk saga with the contract. That got settled. And I know a lot of people have made a lot about, you know, the rebuild being over, and this was the time where things were supposed to turn around. And it's the Ottawa Senators who find themselves eighth in the division. I look at this and I say, you know, considering the COVID situation, it's almost like I'm going to give a mulligan to this idea that this is supposed to be the rebuild is over season. How do you look at this season so far for Ottawa?
Yeah, it's, you know, they were playing badly before, not badly, but just kind of bad enough to lose. You know, they weren't getting blown out in games like they were early last year. The goaltending's been a little bit better, especially when Philip Gustafson is in net. You know, Matt Murray still doesn't have a win this season. So they've been okay. They've been competing, but it's just little letdowns or, you know, power play not coming through. You know, they had a big win over Pittsburgh on Saturday, so that was great. But, you know, I think by Sunday, the weight of COVID and a back-to-back and everything just kind of came crashing down on them, and they really looked pretty awful in that game. So, you know, the tricky part now, as you say, you can give them a mulligan, but, you know, trying to reload now, get some players back, what kind of shape are they going to be in physically and mentally when they come back to, you know, they're cleared to practice later this week. Supposed to be on a big Western swing next week, starting in Colorado next Monday. You know, they've got to be some positive signs before then in terms of getting the numbers back and the guys feeling better and stop the positive cases. But it's going to be a big ask for them to, you know, go through on that trip and try to win a couple of games. So it's already starting to look like the season is a little bit of a write-off in terms of being competitive and competing for a playoff spot. But on the bright side, we've had some young players come up like a Lassie Thompson, an Igor Sokolov, and they performed very well. So we're getting a little bit of a sneak preview into the future here.
Yeah, Thompson specifically, right away. Like, I remember when he was drafted and there was, you know, I know Kelowna was certainly disappointed he didn't end up going back to the Rockets, which was going to be a Memorial Cup year for Kelowna. They were hosting before it got shut down due to COVID. I know there was a disappointment there. And we wondered about his development, but from it almost seemed, Wayne, the moment that he arrived on the scene in Ottawa, like, I remember watching that first game and I said, this guy looks like an NHLer. Like, what am I missing here? Like, have they been, why are they hiding this guy in Belleville? Like, he looks good right out of the hop here, Wayne.
Well, couple of funny things. First of all, he didn't play all that well last year. He kind of had a tough time in the American League. And then he was coming off a high ankle sprain. So this guy was hurt. So last weekend, you know, before he came up to Ottawa, he basically went up to the Belleville coach and said, look, put me in. You guys, you're shorthanded. Everybody's gone up to Ottawa. You know, I can go. I'm not 100%, but I can go. So, you know, he played a game down there, came up here, and he was basically thrown into the fire playing first line minutes. You know, he was on the first line pairing with Thomas Chabot the other night. So and really, you know, I don't know how old your listeners are, but he kind of reminds me a little bit of Sammy Salo. I don't know if you remember Sammy Salo.
Big hard shooting defenseman from Vancouver. Yeah,
I think, you know, Lassie's got a pretty good shot. He's not as big as Sammy, but just really smooth, really smart, really, you know, hard first pass, and just really calm and cool back there. So he's been terrific. It'll be interesting to see what they do if he goes back down. You know, he's one of the young guys on an entry-level deal, so it's easier to send those guys down when the NHL guys come back. But, you know, he's been just terrific.
Yeah, the path of least resistance. Well, you know, one of the interesting things here, you know, you mentioned, you know, the season getting away from the Ottawa Senators, and we always hear about, you know, the cut line of, you know, early November or U.S. Thanksgiving, and if you're not in the playoffs by then, you're not going to make it, or the odds are stacked against you. You need a St. Louis Blues type run with Jordan Binnington, or as we saw last year with Nashville and UC Saros. Like, unless you have one of those in you, generally by the time November is done, if you're not in the playoffs, you might be done as well. You know, like in Montreal, I'm really only asking one question at this point, and that is, who wants Ben Chiarot? Should we be saying the same things about some expiring contracts on Ottawa, and maybe Nick Paul is the obvious one here?
Yeah, boy, I can't see them letting Nick Paul go. they just love him here. I mean, I suppose it's possible if they really take a hard look at you know, the number of young guys in the pipeline. There's just so many good young players, totally, you know, coming through the system. But I would have a hard time seeing them let Nick Paul go. He plays so well with Connor Brown. Of course, those two were magic at the World Championships.
Yep.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see him get rewarded with a contract, but certainly a guy that would be attractive to a lot of teams going down the stretch. He could play anywhere. He could play any line, kill penalties. Not a great finisher necessarily, but he kind of gives you everything else, and it's a real kind of a heart and soul and pulse of this team, especially the lower lines when the skill guys come back and take up the top two lines.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Stützle, I was making this point, Wayne, on the program yesterday, saying that red line to red line, I can't think of another player who's performed so well but had such a hard time getting the puck over the red line. But in between the red lines, like, Tim Stützle has looked, at times exceptional. Now, he finally found the back of the net on the weekend and said, look, it wasn't exactly my best game, but I'm glad that I scored. We all know how good this guy is going to be. We see it pretty much every night in glimpses, certainly. Where do you see Tim Stützle on this team right now?
Well, you know, I think you painted a pretty accurate picture there. He's been visibly frustrated at times. You've seen him kind of smash a stick over the boards, and he's hit a lot of posts. He's hit crossbars, including on the power play last week. But it's coming, and you know, he did score a nice goal the other day, and I think they're going to come in for him. What's really nice is that, unlike a lot of young players, when they struggle, they get, you know, pushed down the lineup and they're not on the power play anymore. You know, DJ Smith hasn't really done that. He's really stuck with this kid because he knows what an important piece he is for the future. And, you know, he's got Brady Tkachuk, his roommate from last year, and Josh Norris, you know, another roommate from last year in his corner. He's got a ton of support. The fans still love him. You know, the fans absolutely adore this kid.
Yeah.
You remember we scored the hat trick last year, and kids threw hats in his backyard when they came home from the road trip. It was one of the highlights of the season. And he's going to be fine. I do think he still needs to grow physically. You know, like he's not yet 20 years old. You could see on occasion, I don't know if you remember that overtime where he kind of had a turnover at the far blue line and then got out-muscled for the puck coming home trying to defend, and he got out-muscled. I mean, those are the kinds of plays where you could see in a year or two, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say a name, and I just want to get your initial reaction to it. Shane Pinto.
Wow.
That was tough to watch at the draw.
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking because, you know, Smith kept saying, we want to take our time with this kid. He's 20 years old. I guess he just turned 21 the other day. He's so important. He jumped right in to be their number two center this year after playing just 12 games last year. They tried to take their time with the shoulder injury, but, you know, you and I both know from our history around this game, shoulders can be very, very tricky. They thought he was good to go. Don't forget, they weren't really practicing, so I don't know that he had a lot of kind of contact drills to kind of test it out beforehand. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just at a face-off, and you saw the shoulder drop down, just the sudden torque, I guess, of and just kind of lifted that shoulder out of position again. So they haven't really said what the plan is for Shane Pinto, but I wouldn't be surprised if a surgery is in the works here to try and, you know, keep this thing from popping out again, because they just can't have this happen with a young player and have it reoccur. But he's such an important part for this Senators team that's, you know, kind of thin down the middle anyway. Mm-hmm. And he's just stepped in and just been so mature and so solid.
His camp was great. Like, great, like full stop right away, like in camp. It's like, well, Shane Pinto is taking a job here right out of training camp.
He looks like, I kept saying, he looks like he's been in the league 10 years. Like, he just didn't have that look of awe about him or, you know, geez, can I do this? Just right away, like you said, in training camp and in preseason, and then when the games started, he's just, don't forget that, you know, when he was at North Dakota, he won in the conference offensive and defensive player of the year, the first one to ever do that. So he came up here with just an unbelievable two-way game. So he was, just ready to go right off the bat.
Tough to watch that at the draw. Listen, Wayne, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for sharing your insight and experience on the Ottawa Senators situation right now. Next three games postponed due to COVID. Wayne, thanks so much for doing this. Much appreciated. Be well.
Anytime, Jeff.
There he is. Wayne Scanlon covers the Ottawa Senators for Sportsnet. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Rick Peckham will be dropping by. Foster Hewitt Award winner. In the meantime, someone officially calling it a career, as announced by the NHL Players Association today, is someone who is a three-time All-Star, someone who played over 1,000 games in the NHL, someone that played in big Canadian markets, Calgary, Toronto, Ottawa, and someone who I mentioned off the top the first time I saw him play. I said, wow, this guy hits like Stevens and shoots like McInnes. He is Dion Phaneuf, who today officially called it a career. Dion, first of all, thanks so much for doing this. And second of all, congratulations on what was really an exceptional career.
Thank you very much for having me, Jeff, and thanks for the kind words. It's definitely a very exciting day for me, a special day. A lot of reflecting over the last little while, knowing that I was going to officially announce it. I've been retired for, been out of the game for a couple of years now, but to be able to officially announce it, I can't thank Brendan Shanahan and the Toronto Maple Leafs organization for what they've done for me and making this such a memorable day. Hosting my media availability and just treating me and my family with just such first class. So it's been a busy day, but I'm really enjoying it. And when you reflect back, there's lots of good times and there's lots of smiles for sure.
Absolutely. And you know, when I hear your name, Dion, here's what I think of. I think of someone that wasn't afraid of a big stage, and that's not true of a lot of hockey players. Calgary was a big stage, and right away you distinguished yourself on that blue line. 20 goals, Calder finalists, big hits, all of it. And in Toronto, taking that role is really challenging, and a lot of guys would shy away from it. Cameras follow you everywhere. Microphones follow you everywhere. I've always maintained it takes a special type of person to be a captain, to be a leader in a Canadian market. Because you can't just turn it off when you leave the rink. It follows you everywhere you go. You always have to be on. Is that something, you know, here you are, you know, from Edmonton playing a Red Deer. Is that something you always craved, that big stage, that big spotlight? Because it seemed as if you really did. You never shied away from it.
I just, I look back on my career and even going back into junior, and I have to give Brent Sutter was my general manager and coach in junior, and I have to give Brent a lot of credit about instilling a work ethic and habits of being a good professional, and not just on the ice, in the community. I remember at a young age, being out in the community and talking to kids in elementary school. Brent did a program out there that we went and out to Vancouver and. It was very interesting to go out there with the RCMP and bring back some of the information to these kids in the schools around Central Alberta. And I don't know, I owe Brent a lot for teaching me and instilling me good habits of being a good pro. He used to always say this, and when you're younger, you're listening to your coach, and he was telling us he ran it as close to a professional organization as he could, and it's mm-hmm. going to help us down the road. And it really did. So I looked at where I started in Calgary, and I have to give Daryl Sutter a lot of credit for giving me my start in the National Hockey League, not only drafting me, but being my first coach in the National Hockey League. It's funny, on a day like today, I want to thank so many people, and it just seems like there's not enough words and there's not enough words and not enough time. So I was very fortunate to play in four really good markets with great fan bases, and three of them being in Canada and then finishing in Los Angeles. But to be able to play, 90% of my career in Canada, it was very special. The following, the fan bases, the passion that we have for hockey, and not that they don't have that south of the border, but it is special. And then spending, the most amount of my career was in Toronto and being captain here. To be the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs was one of the biggest honors of my career, and something that to this day I'm very proud of. And I wish we had more team success. I wish we would have had more success. But with saying that, I'm still proud to say I was the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's a very historic franchise and one that I've got very fond memories of.
With Dion Phaneuf, who calls it a career today, over 1,000 games. I know that whenever I talk to players, a lot of guys come back to how many games they played, and, oh, I like this guy. This guy played 1,500 games. That guy played 750 games. This guy played 1,000 games. And it was only until I got, you know, sort of deep into talking to hockey players on a consistent basis that I realized how much games played means to you guys and how much of an honor that is. You know, when you cross that 1,000 game threshold, how much pride you guys take in it. Like, goals are a thing, assists are a thing, points, all of it, individual achievements, team success. But how much pride do you take in the number 1,048?
I take an immense amount of pride in being able to say that I played over 1,000 games. And I remember Jerome Ginla. I was in town for his induction ceremony into the Hall of Fame, and it's so well deserved. But I remember when I first started, Jerome was the captain in Calgary and my first captain in the National Hockey League, and he said, "You know, make sure you enjoy every minute of it, and it's going to go by fast." He was 7 or 8 years in at the time, and I remember hitting the 500 game mark and being like, "Wow, that really did go fast." And then, but I am very proud of being able to say that that I played over 1,000 games in the National Hockey League. I was fortunate to live my childhood dream. I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, playing on the outdoor rink my dad put in my backyard, dreaming of playing in the National Hockey League. And then to say that I was able to play as long as I did and have the longevity to play over 1,000 games, it's something I'm very proud of.
I had Erin Ambrose on at the end of the first hour, and she plays with the Canadian national team and was promoting that you were coming up. And she said, make sure, because she blocks a ton of shots. Like, she's always got, like, ice packs all over at the end of games. She said, make sure you ask Dion about blocking shots and the technique of blocking shots, because I could use some advice. So for an audience of one right now, Dion, to someone on the Canadian national team, Erin Ambrose, do you have a message for blocking shots for her?
Yeah, make sure you've got those new protectors on the feet, because those help. That's one of the most important things. That puck's moving pretty quick. But you know what? That's a big part of the game now. It really is. And I think it's a lot about timing. I think it's a lot about having the courage to get in the lane and know the puck's going to hit you. And yeah, those would be the tips I'd say. But make sure your feet are covered up with that plastic. It makes it a lot less painful.
Absolutely. Hey, I said this off the top. Like, I remember the first time watching you play, and I'm like, this guy's a combination of Scott Stevens and Al MacInnis. You know, you're physical, you hit for keeps, and you shot for keeps as well. At what point did those skills start to emerge in a young Dion Phaneuf?
I always liked the physical side of the game. I always idolized Scott Stevens and the way that he played the game. Wayne Gretzky was my favorite player growing up, being a kid from Edmonton. And then as I got older and I was a defenseman, I really, you know, turned my attention to Scott Stevens. He hit with such power, but clean. And he was always, you know, known as a great leader. I really looked up to him in the way that he played the game. So I'd say, like, when I got into junior, you don't really know a ton about the NHL draft, except the fact that you're playing with guys that have been drafted now on your team in junior hockey. So you're kind of thinking, okay, well, maybe there's a chance if you do well. And I was very fortunate to be able to have a good draft year, and the Calgary Flames picked me. So I think it's, you never really stop developing in sport, in pro sport, even in pro sport. So I worked on my game. I was fortunate enough to be put in positions where I was able to use my shot, whether it be on the power play or on offensive zone faceoffs, et cetera. So that all comes back to the coach trusting you and putting you in positions to succeed. So it kind of comes full circle. But I enjoyed the physical aspect of the game. I liked to compete in that aspect. I hope that I'm remembered as a player that played the game the right way, but played it hard and physical, and that was definitely a big part of my game.
Let me ask you a follow-up on junior, because you've mentioned junior hockey a couple of times, and you played a Red Deer, and you mentioned Brent Sutter. So when the Memorial Cup was in Red Deer a few years ago, I was hosting, and I was there with Colby, and Colby was a Rebel. And so we went, and Colby and I took a couple of days and went everywhere. Went to Brian Sutter's farm and spent an afternoon with the Sutters, and that was wonderful. Went to Brent's cottage, Sylvan Lake, took us to, what was the name of the place? Chiefs. Took us to Chiefs as well in Red Deer. When I say Red Deer or the Red Deer Rebels to Dion Phaneuf, what comes to your mind?
Well, first and foremost, I have to thank my billets. They were like second parents to me. Dan and Christine Doyle in Red Deer, Alberta, were incredible for me. They were like a second mom and dad, and they welcomed me into their home with their two children, Sean and Jessica. So I felt part of the family, and I think that that's a major, major thing when you're moving away from home at 15, 16 years old. It's a big part of the adjustment period. So that was first and foremost. When I think back to Red Deer, that sticks out first. And then the second thing that sticks out is an incredible junior franchise with great fans. We played in front of 6,000 people, a sold out. It was called the Centurion back then. And we were very fortunate to have good teams. We always had deep playoff runs. They won the Memorial Cup the year before I got there. And we had a great following, incredible support in the community. And I think of it as one of the best development organizations in the CHL, and there's been a lot of good professionals come out of there, and Brent did a lot of good for a lot of people.
Sure did. Before I let you go, what's next for Dion Phaneuf as you project out the next few years of your life here?
Well, I'm be honest with you in saying that I'm enjoying. We've got an almost 4-year-old daughter, so I enjoy having breakfast with her every morning and taking her to school or preschool. And I definitely have interest in getting back into the game. The game's done so much for me and my family, whether that be scouting, whether that be player development, whether that be on the business side. I'm not sure, but I definitely have interest in getting back in some capacity. But as for right now, I'm going to enjoy today. I've got all my family in town, so we're going to enjoy this evening, and it's a special day for me and my family.
I have to ask you one question about your daughter. That's the Canadian question. Left shot or right shot?
Tennis. She plays tennis with her right hand.
Perfect. Okay, good. Yeah. Even better. Listen, Dion, this has been great. Congratulations on a wonderful career. Take a lot of pride in a lot of things that you did, not just in the NHL, but in junior hockey, international competition as well. Well-decorated and well thought of. Dion, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I really appreciate it, and have a great day.
Dion Phaneuf, former NHL defenseman, 55 playoff games, 1,048 NHL games, and that is something that you talk to any pro, and they always come back to how many games this person played or that person played. Oh, man, that guy played 1,000 games. That guy played 500 games. That counts a lot to a lot of these guys. Meanwhile, someone like me, man, you played one game. You had one shift. You sat on the bench for one game. That is a dream. I can't even imagine thinking about playing 1,000. Congratulations to Dion Phaneuf. We'll see what happens for the remainder. Listen, he's happy being a dad. Don't blame him. He's made his money. He's made his mark. Left his mark in hockey. Sounds like he wants to get back in some capacity at some point. But, man, good for him. Stay home with your daughter. Have cereal in the morning. And watch her play tennis. That's awesome. We'll take a break here on the program. Thanks for Dion Phaneuf for stopping by. And Aaron Ambrose listening somewhere. Hope you got some good shot blocking advice there. Get your shot blockers on your feet. Rick Peckham's going to be dropping by in a couple of moments. A couple of reasons. One, 2020 Foster Hewitt Award winner. That is well-deserved. Former play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And will be handling the recreation for the Nashville-Toronto game, filling in for his good buddy Pete Weber, who was a little bit under the weather. Coming off the bench, not off the bench, coming out of retirements for it. Rick Peckham joins me in a couple of moments here as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Dion Phaneuf for stopping by, and congratulations on a 14-season NHL career. And congratulations, very much in order, for our next guest, 2020 Foster Hewitt Award winner, and well-deserved as well, the great Rick Peckham joining me on the program. Rick, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I always I wasn't able to go yesterday, but the luncheon is always wonderful. How was your Hall of Fame luncheon? I always love talking to Scott Morrison about the luncheon.
Yeah, it was great. I got a chance to chat with Scott a little bit afterwards, and Tony Gallagher, who I hadn't seen in years, Tampa Bay and Hartford haven't tangled much with the Vancouver market
right.
over
yes.
the years, so I haven't had much chance to see him. So it was great to visit with him and also at the event last night. But Gary Bettman, Bill Daly being on hand for that, Glenn Anderson, Jerry Cheevers, who was one of my guests and broadcast partner for 9 years in Hartford, was on hand as well. Pat Foley made plans and came up and to enjoy the entire Hall of Fame experience yesterday, and it was great to see him. So many great memories coming back and seeing people, some of whom you haven't seen in a long, long time.
Listen, anyone who's ever heard your call knows how great you are. This is such a well-deserved honor. Who are some of the, when you first found out, you know, that you'll be the recipient of the 2020 Foster Hewitt Award, you know, who are some of the people that you think of right away? You mentioned, you know, Jerry Cheevers, you know, former, you know, colleague, but who else goes through your mind?
Well, you just go through the years and just think of the people, and many of them were able to make it to the luncheon yesterday. We had a great time, but Chuck Caton, a longtime legendary radio voice of the Whalers, and he was just such a great partner who helped me get settled in Hartford when I came in 84, came to mind, and Chuck obviously was there, and he presented me, and I'm so grateful for that. But Cheesy, Bobby Taylor, the Chief, was on hand. Paul Kennedy, our longtime host. I mean, all of these people that have touched your life. Jordy Robertson, a great player in Rochester when I was there in the early 80s, and still a great friend. It was just great to have all those people there.
You know, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Bobby Taylor. And I loved, you know, the chemistry there was obvious. And I'm, you know, old enough to remember him, you know, playing as a backup with the Philadelphia Flyers. And you mentioned Vancouver a second ago, you know, legendary bench clears where he's right in the middle of it, even though he's a backup netminder, he's throwing it like he's the starter. Do you have a couple of words for Bobby Taylor? I've always got time on any program I'm on to hear about Bobby.
Well, his passion is unmatched, I think, of any color analyst on TV now or on radio. Just amazing, you know, how game in, game out, he's able to get that passion going, prepares well, learned a lot from him, just from what he had learned through his experiences and his playing career. And you know, by the time I met him, I had known him a little bit when he was a Flyers announcer, but I think he'd spent 18 years working with Gene Hart on the Flyer broadcast before mm-hmm. we even started working together in Tampa Bay in 95. So just a wealth of knowledge and experience from the playing ranks and the broadcasting ranks, and just a great, great friend who's always there at a time of need. And just I'm very proud that he was able to come, and he's, you know, been a friend for so long.
And yeah, such a wonderful guy as well, as you mentioned. You know, I remember Miles Davis used to have a great quote. He said, sometimes it takes you a long time to sound like yourself. And it sounds kind of weird, but then you think about it, it's like, yeah, it does take a while until you can really find your own voice, whether you're a musician or whether you're calling a hockey game. Rick, I'm curious, at what point in your career did you feel confident in saying, okay, this is my voice now?
I think probably 2 or 3 years into my time in Hartford. You know, in Rochester, I was doing mostly radio and just learning all the time and just trying to, as you say, find that voice. I came to the Whalers and I really felt like I had to jam 10 pounds of information in a 5-pound bag and really didn't settle into a solid style, I don't think, until 3-4 years into my years at Hartford. And then I really felt the last few years with the Lightning really got into a rhythm with some competitive teams that always keep you sharp as a broadcaster night in, night out, because, you know, people are watching, and You know, the standard set by the team is high. Your standard must be high as well. And so I felt that I was able to get some momentum going there in those last few years with the Lightning as well.
Any favorite games along the way? I mean, the Cup Finals are always a highlight, but perhaps, you know, a Tuesday night in Minnesota, maybe, you know, a preseason game in Long Island. Are there any sort of games that we would look at and say, well, it might be nondescript, but Rick will, you know, A, make it sound great, and B, it'll always stick to your memory. Anything other than the big ones that come to mind for you?
Well, I think when you're involved in games that somehow unusual circumstances are thrust on you in your describing the action, it might not even be the game itself, but what's going on around it, I think, jump out. I think doing the games in the summer of 2020, when the league was playing the playoffs through the bubble, and the Lightning, of course, in that run to their first of the two Stanley Cups. And the last series we did was the first series against Columbus, dramatic ending. Braden Point wins the clinching game in overtime. And and I got a chance to call a moment like that. It was just set up perfectly for a broadcaster trying to call a game off a monitor. You couldn't miss it. That stands out. I always think of a game that Jerry and I did, the Whalers and the Quebec Nordiques. And I think Kerry Fraser was the referee. And crazy stuff was happening. The fans were just irate at some of Kerry's calls. And somebody went to the men's room and grabbed toilet paper and somehow got into, I don't know, a place where they were storing the extra rolls or whatever, brought them out and started throwing them on the ice.
Oh,
and so fans started seeing that, hey, we're going to do that. And they had to stop the game. And the Nordiques were threatened with a forfeit if it didn't stop. And it was such a delay that Jerry ended up going downstairs. And I always kid him later as doing these man-on-the-street interviews. He interviewed Kerry Fraser. And I think Ron Tugnutt had come off his game where he had saved 70 shots in a tie with the Bruins at Boston Garden. And he wasn't dressed for that game. So we ended up having him on. Really crazy circumstances, which were a lot of fun. And you look back at a game like that and just shake your head and smile.
That would have been at the Colisée?
Yes.
Now, I was there for the final game of the Colisée. It was Memorial Cup. It was Oshawa and Kelowna. Anthony Cirelli scoring the overtime winner. Scored two goals that game to tie it and then to win it for the Oshawa Generals. And you called plenty of Anthony Cirelli's games in Tampa. I am curious about, you know, through all the rinks that you've been to, do you have a couple of favorites that stand out?
Well, last night watching highlights of Doug Wilson in his Blackhawk days and listening to the foghorn, which really was the original foghorn at Chicago Stadium.
Yeah,
it was just an experience. You saw that game was coming on the schedule. I had always denounced in the Eastern Conference, so we didn't make it to Chicago very often. So you really looked forward to that atmosphere. It was like a playoff game every night in Chicago Stadium. That certainly stands out among the buildings, you know, that are still in use. The Bell Center, always a tremendous atmosphere in there, and you could go in there for an exhibition game and it would sound like you know, last 2 weeks of the regular season or something. So, you know, those buildings certainly jump out. The Shark Tank in San Jose, when the Sharks are playing well, boy, that place holds the sound well. Winnipeg MTS Center is always one of my favorites too, because of the atmosphere in that building and the location where you're right over the ice.
Yeah.
You can't miss a play. It's a fun place to announce it.
So, following Nashville Predators Twitter, I am greeted with this message. Pete Weber is feeling under the weather, not COVID related, and he elected not to travel for tonight's game. He's going to be replaced by a longtime NHL broadcaster and great friend, Rick Peckham, for the game. Weber expected back in the booth alongside Hal Gill on Saturday. You excited?
I am. I've been spending the day preparing here, getting familiar with some names like Tanner Janot. I really did not know very much about him before this season. Of course, there's the standbys like Matt Duchene and John Tavares and so many of the Leafs. And that I'm familiar with more from our division. But it's right back to the old routine in terms of preparation, getting ready for this game. Pete and I have known each other since probably the late 70s. Mm-hmm. And he was working in Buffalo when I was in Rochester. And we had done everything from hockey games to AAA baseball games together with the regular Red Wing announcer from the AAA baseball team. And just we've always had so much fun. You know Pete and
how
He's much
great.
Fun it is to be around him. And I had heard that, you know, he had to leave a game on Saturday. He couldn't finish the game. And so fortunately, I touched base with him today, and he's feeling much, much better and really is hopeful that he can join the team in Montreal. But I felt, you know, here's a spot where, you know, Pete can't, you know, he's not feeling well. He's not with a team. I'm in a hotel that's two blocks away from Scotiabank Arena. I had planned on staying till Wednesday anyway with my family here after the ceremonies yesterday. So why not help out a buddy and jump in there and see what we can do.
That's outstanding. By the way, Tanner Jeannot is one of the most physically fit hockey players you will ever see. There's still, you know, strength and athletic records in the Western Hockey League that he helped set. That guy is, you can light matches off him, is what they say. Rick. Torn up like a bad report card. He's a specimen, Rick. So you'll enjoy him. Listen, this has been a lot of fun. You've always been one of our favorites. You're always generous with your time. It's a great honor, the Foster Hewitt Award. Congratulations to be honored by the Hockey Hall of Fame like this. It's an award and achievement that is at the zenith of our industry. So congratulations and have fun with the game tonight. We look forward to hearing the call once again.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you for your kind words and keeping me in mind. And as you put your shows together, now and again, giving me a call and really looking forward to tonight. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Both teams are playing great. So,
yeah,
we should have a heck of a hockey game.
Two teams on a 3-game winning streak. Listen, this has been great. Rick, thanks so much for doing this. Much appreciated. And once again, a very well-deserved congratulations.
Thanks very much. My pleasure to be on with you.
There he is, Rick Peckham, 2020 Foster Hewitt Award winner at the luncheon yesterday. And Tony Gallagher goes in. He wins the Elmer Ferguson Award. And Rick, as we mentioned, will be calling the Nashville-Toronto game for Nashville Radio alongside Hal Gill. Quick update. Elliot Friedman tweeting this a little while ago. Actually, about an hour ago. Merrick Lake. Hearing Vancouver owner Francesco Aquilini to meet with general manager Jim Benning this afternoon. Neither individual will comment, but from what I understand, this is a meeting to understand why the team is losing and address it, not to make a change at the position. As we bring in our producer, Matt Marchese. So Vancouver, Francesco Aquilini meeting with Jim Benning today. Not to make a change, according to Elliot, but to address why they're losing. What are you saying today, Matty?
Oh, I mean, it's always good when you get a vote of confidence from the owner, right? It never turns out not in your favor, or you get fired in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, they've played three really bad hockey games in a row. But parts of the games were pretty good. Like, the first two periods against Vegas, I thought Vancouver was good. They got the lead once again against Anaheim yesterday to watch it fritter away, and a 3-1 game turned into a 5-1 game after an empty netter and the Vancouver Canucks leaving Yaroslav Halak out to dry. But now it's a 3-game homestand. And you know, we've talked about this in a couple of different places, and it's a saying that Gord Stellick always stands by. If you're going to suck, don't suck at home. It's one thing to do it on the road. Doing it at home, that burns. So this game against Colorado coming up is huge if nothing changes today in Vancouver. Nice little show today. What stood out for you?
Everybody was great as always. Firstly, how is Boomer's nickname not Commissioner Gordon? Like, did I miss something right here? It has to be. Like, it's basically written for you. But no, you know what? Hearing Dion Phaneuf talk about his time in Toronto and wishing he had more success with the organization, like team success, it's a real shame because I feel like Dion Phaneuf was somehow made the villain in Toronto. You know, there was the Salute Gate nonsense and whatever.
That was a bad move. Anyone involved will tell you that. That's a bad move.
And he talked about regretting that decision and whatnot. But when you look at just the criticism that came with Dion Phaneuf was because of a contract. And I've always said this, and I even said this when I was on the air on Saturday, was I always hate the idea of hating a player because of how much money that they make. If somebody offers you $8 million, are you going to go, you know what, I'm actually worth six. You should probably change that. Nobody, if you say that, you're not very bright. So for him to be, I feel like a lot of the criticisms was because of the contract that he had and less about the player that he was. If Dion Phaneuf made $5 million a season or $4 million a season, then everybody would be talking about him. Oh, yeah, you know, he was a great Leaf. But the fact that he made the money that he did was the reason for the criticism. And then, you know, evidently it turned out to be the reason why he needed to be moved. But I feel like that it's a real shame because Dion Phaneuf was a very good hockey player. And it's just, you know, sometimes this market, and he wasn't afraid of it, like you said, but sometimes this market eats up good hockey players. It's a real shame sometimes.
Yeah, it's if you don't like the contract, that's not the player's fault or the agent's fault. Take that up with the general manager if you don't like it. That's a GM issue. I'm with you. I mean, I understand that players always skate with their salary cap on their back. Like they have their number, they have their nameplate, and they have their salary in everybody's heads as they skate through. Are you skating like a $6.5 million player? Are you skating like a $4 million player? Are you skating like a $10 million player? But the minute that the Players Association caved in and allowed a salary cap and conceded on that point, everything changed and everybody was going to be measured by their money. And it was going to be players that wore it generally, right? Like part of the issue with Dion Phaneuf, I think was the salary. I think part of it too was when you're not a good team and you're not a good team in a high profile market, who wears it? The person that has to go out and face the cameras after every game. And there are two players that jump to my mind that in bad times always got out. This is with the Maple Leafs, that always got out in front of the cameras after bad games and didn't take the back door, didn't take the, you know, slip out before the media arrives avenue. One was Dion Phaneuf and the other was Matt Stajan. How many times did you see after a really bad Leafs game, you know, the other guys with letters on their sweaters, they weren't out there facing it, but every single time Matt Stajan went out there and took bullets, every time, even though Pat Quinn would sometimes, you know, stand outside the dressing room and filibuster waiting for the guys to shower up and change and get out before the media turned their attention to the players. That was a really always a shrewd move by a veteran coach in Pat Quinn. But Matt Stajan always faced it, and Dion Phaneuf did as well, right? He was there with the Red Bull hat, facing all the microphones and all the cameras. And that's why I said made the point off the top of the broadcast today, Matty. He was a guy that understood it and got it and didn't shy away from it. And even though some of those pressers were at times, you know, vicious, and he had to wear a lot of losses for the team, he went and did it. You know, he went and did it in big markets as well. And you think of some of his partners in Calgary, like early on, like you think of, like, I always think of someone like Roman Hammerlock and how much Roman Hammerlock meant to the career of Dion Phaneuf. You can ask this about anybody. Like if you talk to, let me give you a good example. Nick Lidstrom. You talk to Nick Lidstrom. Mm-hmm. You know who he'll talk about? His first D partner in Detroit. You know who that was?
Brad McCrimmon.
Yeah. He'll go out of his way to talk about how much Brad McCrimmon meant to him. Like Nick Lidstrom, who many consider the greatest defenseman of all time. Sorry, Bobby Orr. Will go out of his way to comment on someone like McCrimmon for helping him.
Hey, Jeff, quickly. Have to give a shout out to Anthony Cirelli. A goal, a fight, and took a puck off the face last night. I know he's one of your favorites.
I love him. Anthony Cirelli, the last goal ever at the Colisée. I was there to witness it. Great event, great player. Got to wrap up. Thanks to all of our guests today. Rick Peckham, Dion Phaneuf, Wayne Scanlon, Aaron Ambrose, and Jim Boomer Gordon. Thanks to Lance Kennedy. And you just heard from our own Drew Doughty, Matt Marchese. Thanks for joining me. Back tomorrow, more of the Merrick Show. Enjoy.